You're listening to Time Lost, a poetry podcast by Perdu, Center for Poetry and Experimentation in Amsterdam. We invite authors to undust a work that has gone unpublished or was unpublishable in the first place. Every episode, you'll be hearing a work that is now being granted a second chance.
Welcome to Time Lost. My name is Romy De Winkel, and today's guest is poet and artist based in Los Angeles, Elaine Kahn. Kahn has published two books, one titled Women in Public from 2015, and the latest one titled Romance or the End, published in 2020. She's also teaching at the Poetry Field School, which offers affordable and non-hierarchical writing workshops. Welcome, Elaine. We're very happy to have you here, although over Zoom.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for today's episode, you have responded to our prompt about unpublishability in quite an interesting way. because on the one hand, you send us a document carrying lines and titles that have remained unpublished and perhaps wandering around your notebooks, but somehow never having it made into a poem. And on the other hand, you have sent us some unpublished poems, but finished ones. And today we will focus on the latter, but I was still curious, what is it about the unpublished lines and titles that they didn't make it into a poem?
I mean, they just haven't. There's not a quality that they share. I think sometimes putting together a poem can be a little bit like putting together a puzzle. I mean, not entirely, but there's a similar characteristic of like you have to find the pieces that go in the right spot, and you have to be a little bit ruthless. Like I have some of those lines I sent you are things I really, really like, but if they don't fit, they cannot go. So that's really all it is. And I still hope to use them. It was actually, that was a fun thing about putting those together for you, was then I was like, oh, yeah, I should use this stuff, and started trying to make poems out of some of it.
So do you sometimes work with just like one phrase that maybe you've written down ages ago, but then sort of work off that or put it together?
Yeah, definitely. I think more often that's a way that titles come, like if there's some line that I have not been able to fit into a poem for years, then finally I'll be like, okay, it could just be a title, because titles can stand alone more easily. And I like having titles that sit a little bit apart from a poem anyway. So it's okay if they're not like completely in sync. And then, you know, sometimes poems get constructed, like one of the poems I'm going to read today, The Good News About Hell, it ends with like two couplets that I just had floating around for years, and I just wanted to figure out how to fit them. And so I kind of did a little bit build a poem around.
It must be a satisfying feeling once they click.
So satisfying. Yeah. It's so satisfying for like 20 minutes. Yeah. It's like the best time in my life is like 20 minutes after I finish a poem. And then after, you know, because then after those 20 minutes pass, I can start messing with it again. And I'm like a pretty, I edit things a lot, and it's hard for me to like stop editing. So, you know, there's the first feeling of, oh, I figured it out. This is the poem. Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. And then I just kind of read it over and over again for like 20 minutes. And then I start editing it again sometimes. Other times I just put it away.
So today we will, for the rest of the interview, mostly focus on the poems that you also sent in.
All right, so you want me to start reading now?
Yeah.
Okay. The Good News About Hell. Suburbs are the perfect habitat for deer. Jesus said, they make the dumb tongues of men sing, their antlers branch until the leaves fall off and earth gives up its privates. I've heard that to reach enlightenment, all you have to do is touch the earth. God as lakes. I'm waiting for the storm to end in a styrofoam grotto at the Catholic Church on Tower Road. For some reason, God has imprinted us with a desire that's awakened within cave-like structures. I once held an injured bat. Intimacy is sharing something private, St. Jeremiah complained, but only after being ridiculed for an entire day. Dante and Virgil walked through rain to touch the future. My cats hide in the closet to avoid the vacuum. An exit does exist, but the ocean is more knowable than what comes next. I focus on the sound of water. All my friends are waiting for me to slip, laments St. Jeremiah. No wonder he was so ashamed of what he saw, neon loosening the night like every reason is an unreason. Like heaven is whatever, death that lasts forever. Do you know the love that eats, the love you eat from? It burns through you, like the Lord himself. Self-legislation can be creative. I have arrived here for our stupid meeting. I have no precepts that I know of. I am trying to invent a way to look for something I once lost, my love, a series of unblinking numbers. Technology protects our death from shit and mystery. I'm pointing towards what these things lack. A world shifts out and into focus, reorganizing light red bougainvillea. Credits roll in absence. Pleasure fills me in the past. It takes a lot of energy to lose touch of what is real. The stillness in my chest. A bending sequence. I will never stop writing the book. My private life is made out of my speech acts, I said. I walked here and I looked at every tree. One of four examples. We shoved each other's faces back and forth, gentle, like it's love if love were metrical in any way, not just a moment more ghastly than serene. Still, that summer was amazing. I did what I did, and it was what I wanted. Imagination's limited by one's encounters, but reality goes on and on. It wasn't always like this. Lost components turn a green screen green. I keep track of everything because the world is nonsense. Water squints, transformed just as it plunges. Congrats on being a person, I remember. The opposite of pills, an oily hold uncovered. I never should have touched it, but I didn't care because the words felt good. Cool Hand Luke is a movie about having fun. The men wave their arms in labor. They have little to no excess fat. The sky is a flat paint bucket fill of blue. The men are in a circle. Sound drops away. The rules are a circle. Cool Hand Luke is a movie about the rebellion of jokes. Part 1. Warner Brothers logo. Light bulbs are a hole in the picture, a sterile idea. I don't have imagination. I just have eyes. I miss weather, but I am not in this poem. Cool Hand Luke is a movie about building community. One wants to win, the other wants to laugh and never be afraid of pain. Let the bosses suffer. No one could ever know death. Sun like a press into a hot eye. There is not an after. What's left just spreads out. Cool Hand Luke is a movie about having fun. Shopping. At the beach, I wish to die. A little thud without dimension. The psychiatrist ignores me, which is usual. The beach smears past. The morning never comes or happens. I remember a word and it destroys my brain plaques. There's nothing passive about knowledge. I think language invented money. A museum is comprised of squares. God was the original liar. I buy a pair of nylons. I look beautiful and have no secrets. To suffer forever in the smallest pigsty of illuminated growth. Everything drops like aspirin. Spit thin into the mat, the maggots in the shower drain. I never saw them. I don't ever touch what's left and never look at you. The lights just glow like garbage presses, personal, dissatisfied. How I arouse the type. A miniskirt, a gallery, a caption, things about the ocean. Life is birthed from non-life, lies. A minor key, deleting years of pleasure, years of pain, a raincoat, cactus, moral rule, experiments in cerulean and white machines. Then from the film, I wait for portioning to happen. For the cut to come across and reach me, life, lengthening to non-life. Reality begins with a face. I pull apart your eye.
Thank you, Elaine, for this lovely reading. It's actually really nice also to read these, to have these six shorter poems read.
It's funny because these are like really long poems for me. it's okay. It's just, yeah. I mean, they're not like, you know, they're, I mean, as a group, I feel like it's like longer poems for me. I write really short poems. I mean, that's, you know, as I was saying before, I work with fragments a lot. I like things that are really compressed and I try to cut everything. Like I don't leave a lot of excess in my work, which is something I'm like actually trying to start being a little more loose. But I just, sometimes I feel like my poems, it's like the one place I have control. So I just want them to be like very stable, or not stable, but I want them to be like just the way I want them to be. And I don't like leaving things I'm not sure about.
Right. So it's not coming from this sort of minimalist tradition of feeling like you shouldn't burden someone with too much baggage while they try to climb your poem, so to say.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely related to that. Like I just, I feel like I'm a person who like experiences life with a lot of urgency. So I want things to be, I don't like excess in, I guess in writing actually. Like I don't tend to like, prose that has a lot of, description. I don't like adjectives very much. I'm just always trying to kind of like clear things away so that the words can just kind of be like objects that can, act upon each other and the page.
That's interesting. Yeah. Now I think also the reason I said they were short is more not as a general statement, but more in relation to our previous episodes of this podcast where people have sent in really long prose, kind of prose yeah. poetry. So it's actually nice and refreshing to read like this. Yeah, it's different.
Good.
So I was firstly wondering what you would say is your general relationship towards publishability. Is it something that you take into account when writing, or actually not at all? Or do you feel any strong feelings about this?
I mean, if you're asking, like, are there things I won't publish? I mean, I will publish anything that I think is good. Like, there's nothing I would ever hold back for any other reason than that I didn't think it was good. And I don't, I mean, I've talked about this, I think I talked about it like in an interview at some point, but I have this sort of like self-delusion where I think like it's sort of like, I believe in like this, you know, the conceit of the speaker. And I believe that the things my poems say aren't things I'm saying. And mm-hmm. so I don't feel a sense of like shame or anxiety or concern about the content of my poems, only whether or not I think it's really good. But I would say like the one hang up I have about publishing is I'm a really slow writer, so I can get kind of like protective of my work and like not like I don't always want to just like put it out there. So I don't like I don't publish that much at all actually. And I think I just submitted work like unsolicited to publications for the first time in like 10 years, literally. Mm. Like I just don't really like I publish stuff when people ask for it, but honestly even then I don't really want to. Like, even with this, you know, I was like, well, okay, I'll read these poems, but they can't be printed anywhere. Because mm-hmm. I'm very, like, I don't know if, like, I'm, like, jealous of, like, I'm just, like, they're still mine right now. I'm not ready to give them up.
But it also makes sense with what you're saying earlier about this sort of weighing of every word in a very careful manner. Like it seems, they really seem to become objects in that sense. So I understand yeah. that you feel a bit protective over them.
Yeah, I just like, I guess in a lot of ways, I don't personally value publication that much. So it's always like a bit of a, not even like a compromise, but it's always something I have a little bit of ambivalence towards. And so then I just absolutely won't do it unless it's work I am very confident in.
So it's interesting to me how this sequence of poems also seem to correspond with each other. I'm not sure if that was also intentional in your selection process.
I mean, these are just, poems. This is all the unpublished poems I have.
Okay.
So I did not pick a theme, but you know, these are all poems that were written, you know, recently. They were all written like over the last year or so. So they have that in common. Like they were, you know, written sort of like through COVID and through quarantine. And I think they have like a, like it's for me to read them, they have a strange, like almost like stillness or something. Like they have like a kind of, they don't have that many images like some do, but they're just, there's a coldness to them that I feel like is a little different from some of my earlier work that I have attributed to the solitude of the last year and a half. Like they're just, and I mean, they're also seem pretty concerned with death, which has been a theme, you know, of the last year and a half as well.
No, for sure. Yeah. I thought of it also as they, or a lot of them seem to be dealing with intimacy in an interesting way. So like, almost like they're trying to reach out to touch something but it's also sometimes made specific. For example, In the first poem that you read, there's this holding of an injured bat.
Oh, yeah.
Or in the third one, there's the shoving of each other's faces. But what also stood out to me is that you seem to write about the performance of intimacy. For example, in the very last poem, mm-hmm. You list this variety of objects and interests and things that seem to me like sort of highlighting the things you can do or the things that you can perform in order to relate to someone. It doesn't even have to be like in a romantic context or anything. And by listing them in this way, I feel like you make visible that it is performative instead of just writing it and not reflecting upon the performative elements.
Never thought about that before, but I think that's really true. Yeah. I mean, a thing about the way that I write, I mean, I guess probably everyone writes like this, but I don't like really think a lot about, it's not that there's not intentionality when I write, but it's like I write poems more from a place of like asking questions than from a place of like wanting to explain something. Mm. So usually when I write a poem, like it's like when it's done, I feel a sense of like clarity, but it's not like, oh, this is about XYZ. Like I just, it feels more like the words are all in the right place and like it makes something that means something to me, but I don't really know what other than that. It just
so it's not even like trying to give an answer per se to the question that you started with.
No, or at least not like an answer in the sense we usually think of one. And it's, I mean, like I think sometimes, I think what I hope is to learn something from the process of writing a poem, but I don't think it's like ever as simple as like, oh, okay, I understand that now. It's just,
yeah.
It's more like I feel a sense of like rightness about the work and like a sense of rightness about like the feeling that I have evoked in myself through the work. But yeah.
No, I guess why I maybe projected that upon it was also informed by some of the thematics in your first book, Women in Public, where in my interpretation of some of the works in there, it was very much about, yeah, like feminine performance and having to position your body or your speech acts or even your writing in certain ways where it highlighted this performance, basically. So perhaps I have projected that a bit onto my reading now.
I mean, like, you know, I wrote a book called Romance or the End that's like predominantly concerned with romantic love. And certainly that's something that's in these poems and also my first book. And I think like, I think that's something that I've been very both interested in and like troubled by for, you know, I think most people are. I feel like that's like one of the big questions of early life is like how to have romantic partnership. I mean, I'm sure not for everybody, but like for me, that has been a big question.
Another theme that struck me a bit in these six poems were, is the one about religion.
Yeah.
And in the second to last poem titled Shopping, there's a line that goes, God was the original liar.
Yeah.
And then I was looking through your previous books and then by coincidence corresponded. I opened one of the pages of Romance or the End and there you wrote, love turned me into a liar, lies turned me into a god. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about, well, first of all, maybe the relationship between religion and your writing, but also about this correspondence.
It's interesting. This actually just came. So I teach poetry classes and this just came up in a big way, not just in one class, but sort of like it's a thing students started wanting to talk about, is like, what does God perform in a poem? And I'm actually not religious. I just, to me, God is almost like shorthand for just like, I don't know, like these like inevitabilities, for like the constraints of life. Like, you know, the sort of patterns and limitations that rule our world. And God just becomes like an easy way to say that. I talked about it in my writing group, and one of the people in my writing group said, you know, God, it's like time. It's just sort of, it's like a way of like kind of like concretizing, of like naming these like abstract structures that decide so much. And so that's, I mean, like, and then of course, like, I'm also interested in, you know, in the United States is a very Christian country. Like, it's a country where, like, you know, God is like a part of our government. It's on our money. Like, it's just sort of woven into everything. And it's like, it's, I think it gets used, I think Christianity gets used to like justify very bad things. And then I think, I mean, the idea of lying, I mean, that's a little bit, I mean, it is related to religion and it is related to God, because I think all, and this is something I talk, this is like one of the main themes of my second book, but I think all stories are fictions. Like, I think we are constantly creating narratives out of like scraps of information, but they're just, you know, they are creations. And God was the original creator. So God was the original liar.
And why is it, why is the narration directly connected to the lying?
Because it's just not, there's no, like, there's no neutral, there's no neutrality in a narrative. Like, it's all being filtered through our perceptions and assumptions and experiences. And so, like, any experience we have, we, like, wrap up in, like, our own ideas. And it doesn't mean it's not true, but it's also, like, it's not pure. Like, it's a concoction. And that's a kind of lie, you know, anything that is a concoction, a story that you've made up is a lie, but all stories are made up, I think.
And do you feel like, does this bother you in some way that it's like, does it bother you that it's like presenting as neutral?
No.
Or are these not themes that are?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. I mean, no. I think to me, it's like, I actually think it's something that is an opportunity. Like, when you understand that you kind of can have some say in what kind of stories you tell yourself, about the world you live in, about, you know, oh, like you went to the grocery store and like, was it, you know, was like, I don't know, like you can choose how you interpret an experience, and you can have some control over it. And that's a chance to like choose to have better experiences.
And it's also just a way of perceiving then. So like opening yourself to perceiving like, yeah, a trip to the supermarket in a certain way. And maybe, but then the pitfall of that is that it becomes, if it become, or if it starts to enter like a political terrain, then it starts to become a very individualized duty, so to say.
What do you mean?
So like if you say, for example, you go to the supermarket and one person sees the exact trip to the supermarket in a very different way than another person who does the same thing, right? But it seems also in what you're saying that, and also in the context of Christianity in the US and all this kind of stuff, that these individual experiences are also very much influenced by these very large contexts that you're living in, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like the instability of truth is something that I think has like hugely affected the American political landscape. I mean, we have a system now in which people just wholesale invent. Like, it's not even like, oh, like they've interpreted their, you know, this, like these sets of, you know, experiences or fields of information differently. It's just they have started to understand, and I think people have for years, like you can just say something is true and that is a kind of truth because and like it's something that, like, you know, has been used for bad ends increasingly in this country. And I'm interested in people understanding that, and I don't even know exactly what to do with it, but like it just seems like, I don't know, like we have all these, like, you know, we have these like political debates, and then there'll be these fact checkers afterwards that are like, that was a lie, that was a lie, that was a lie. And it's just like nobody cares, like literally nobody even cares. And it's just, it's like, I guess I don't have, I mean, obviously I don't have an answer for it, like I'm just like, you know, a loser poet. but it's something that I think we need to contend with quite seriously, because it's changing the world really quickly.
Yeah, also like to take imagination and narrativation seriously, perhaps.
Yeah.
As a tool for both bad
as a tool.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's a very powerful tool. It's one of the reasons that, like, I actually think there is value in poetry, and one of the reasons, like, I wish there was like better poetic education in this country, because I think poetry is actually a really direct way to begin understanding like language's power to warp like a story, to warp truth, and like to realize like it's incredible impacts.
Thank you so much for this lovely reading and conversation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
You've been listening to Time Lost, a podcast by Purdue. You can find more information about the episode and our guest on our website, purdue.nl. This podcast was created with the support of the Amsterdam Fund for the Arts and the Dutch Foundation for Literature. Thanks for listening, and until the next Time Lost.